It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Thank with you. Regard to Secretary Clinton and some of the comments I made, I do believe that that could place my objectivity in question. I've given that thought. I believe the proper thing for me to do would be to recuse myself from any questions involving those kind of investigations. I was accused in 1986 of failing to protect the voting rights of African Americans by presenting the Perry County case, the voter fraud case, and of condemning civil rights advocates and organizations, and even harboring, amazingly, sympathies for the KKK. These are damnably false charges. But I have no belief and do not support the idea that Muslims as a religious group should be denied admission to the United States.
Are there any senators in the chamber wishing to change their vote? If not, the ayes are 52, the nays are 47, and one senator responded present. The nomination is confirmed.
Well, and that's how it went down last night. Senator Jeff Sessions now in a vote of 52 to 47 in the Senate will be the Attorney General of the United States. I have to tell you that that's great news. That is absolutely fabulous news. You know, Donald Trump, his cabinet, it is a historic delay. What the Democrats have been doing to Donald Trump has never been done before. And they are understaffed, overworked. And of course, you know, they're trying to fight all of these areas. They had this Justice Department attorney after two refused to defend the executive order on immigration to the Ninth Circus Court. The third one did a poor job. He was weak. And so, but there's nobody running justice right now. Remember, the woman running justice ordered the attorneys not to defend Donald Trump's orders. So she was fired within 2 hours. But, you know, it's a mess there. So thank God Jeff Sessions now has had the vote in the Senate. And now he'll have to be sworn in, and I'm sure that'll happen quickly. I bet you'll see that happening today. And why, practically speaking, do I think, well, this is one of the stories that I read this morning that I thought might help you to understand why Sessions' appointment, apart from everything else that might come to your mind, this is an article this morning out of the Miami Herald from yesterday. At least 121 killings within a 4-year span were carried out by convicted immigrants who were not deported, according to a 2015 U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee document recently reviewed. Every year, federal immigration authorities release foreign nationals convicted of crimes, including murder, because the U.S. Supreme Court has prohibited indefinite detention or because their countries refuse to take them back even after immigration judges have ordered deportation. 121 killings at least within a 4-year span, and not to mention the other years. And there's a lot more to that story, but could I just say to you that this is what Senator Sessions has been standing on the Senate floor, pounding in his gentlemanly way consistently for the past, I don't know how many years, ever since I've known him, that this is wrong, especially during the 8 years of the Obama administration, that American citizens are being put at risk by the out-of-control immigration situation. And so he has been confirmed, Senator Jeff Sessions. He is a hero to me, personally, I have to say. And if you, as you know more about him, he'll be a hero to you, too. So we need to pray for him because he's going into a snake pit. And that, I think, will begin today. But, of course, Elizabeth Warren, the senator from Massachusetts, has been on the floor. You know, she was censured, as you know, day before yesterday because she was reading a letter from Coretta Scott King, with the inference being that Jeff Sessions is a complete racist. I'm going to let Mike Emanuel from Fox take over here. Excuse me. Oh, maybe because I need to clear my throat. And I'll let Mike talk about it a little bit, then I have some comments. Let's listen.
Tempers flared last night when Massachusetts liberal Elizabeth Warren read an old letter from the widow of a civil rights icon.
Mr. President, I am surprised that the words of Coretta Scott King are not suitable for debate in the United States Senate. I ask leave of the Senate to continue my remarks.
Is there objection?
Object.
I appeal the ruling.
Objection is heard.
With that, Senator Warren was told to take her seat and that she would not be allowed to speak further as the Senate considers Jeff Sessions' nomination for Attorney General. Senator Steve Daines said he wasn't looking for a fight.
As the presiding officer, you listen to what's being said on the floor of the United States Senate, and we need to hold both sides to a higher standard.
The Senate has been holding speech marathons about Trump cabinet nominees, and this is the latest sign of irritation.
The Democrats are angry, and they're out of their minds. We're seeing in the Senate Democrats objecting to every single thing.
And some of the GOP anger is likely based on the treatment of a colleague who has been a senator for 20 years.
Nobody here is questioning Jeff Sessions' love of country. Nobody here is questioning his kindness and his collegiality.
Yeah, that's Cory Booker. No one except you. Remember, he testified against Senator Sessions. Here's the thing. They have a right to... I don't have a problem with senators speaking the truth to each other. I've said before, and I'll say again, we could use a lot more straightforward honesty on the Senate floor instead of all the games that they play. But the problem with Senator Warren, that the Republicans have not made clear, well, what else is new? They seem incapable of making things clear. So they talk about this procedure that she has somehow impugned the motives and conduct of their colleague from Alabama. That's Senate speak. But wait, basically what she did was read something that she knew was untrue. She knew that that had been debunked. She knew that Senator Sessions is not a racist. He's been through so many hearings. So she was reading something that was untrue. She was warned about it. They let her go on for 20 more minutes, even after warning her. And that's when they silenced her. And they silenced her because what she was saying wasn't true. And how do I know that? How do I know Coretta Scott King did not think that Senator Jeff Sessions was a racist? Well, here's a recording. This is Coretta Scott King, in her own words, dedicating the Rosa Parks Library. Let's listen.
To President Martindale, to Senator Sessions, to Mayor Bright, to all of the distinguished program participants and guests in this audience today, it's a great honor and privilege for me to join you in celebrating the grand opening of the Rosa Parks Library and Museum. History teaches us that all great freedom movements began with an inspiring act of courage. And in this regard, the American Civil Rights Movement provides a supreme example. The library and museum we dedicate today is a living testament to the courage, commitment, and character of the great woman whose act of courage sparked our freedom struggle, the woman we call Mrs. Rosa Louise Parks.
All right, that was Coretta Scott King dedicating the Rosa Parks Library and acknowledging Senator Sessions, who was key to building that library and helping that come to fruition. You know, the 30-year-old letter that Elizabeth Warren was reading, this was all, listen, I'm assuming this. I haven't read this. I just know, I remember being there when Ted Kennedy was still alive. This is the method that he used. They always drudged up racist accusations against anyone that they opposed. Coretta Scott King probably had no idea at that time that Jeff Sessions had such a sterling record, really, on civil rights. In fact, I've got in my hand a picture of the NAACP, who's now, you know, talking about how much of a racist Jeff Sessions is that they were during the hearings, receiving an award giving an award to Jeff Sessions in April of 2009. NAACP Governmental Award of Excellence to Senator Jeff Sessions. This is the real record of Jeff Sessions, and that's why the Republican senators, McConnell and others, were so upset with Elizabeth Warren, because she was going over information that was proven to be false, and she knew it, and she continued to do it. Now, of course, she's making great hay out of this. She left she's the victim now, and that's why the Republicans kind of fell for this, I have to say. And so she went out in the hallway and then started, you know, talking about how, Mr. President, I'm surprised that the words of Coretta Scott King are not suitable for debate in the United States Senate. I ask leave of the Senate to continue my remarks. So, in other words, the inference is that somehow the Republican leadership in the Senate won't allow Coretta Scott King's voice to be heard in the Senate. It's all made to be a sort of a racial slur against them, and she does it beautifully. You remember Elizabeth Warren was the one who claimed she was Cherokee Indian, and she's not. She's not an honest person. She's a liar. But she's a really good one. And so here she is. And by the way, she has claimed that her floor speech wasn't about fundraising. It was all about nobility and trying to get to the truth about Senator Sessions. But at the same time she was speaking, a letter went out Tuesday evening asking for money for Elizabeth Warren. And she made a lot of money on that. I don't know what the dollar amount is. I was trying to find that before I went on the air here, but a lot of money. And so here's the other story. On Tuesday, the publisher for Senator Elizabeth Warren announced that she's writing a new book. On Tuesday evening, after attacking Senator Sessions on the Senate floor and being warned that her remarks violated Senate rules, she was sanctioned. And after apparently using the Senate floor to kick off her book tour, Warren quickly made the rounds on national TV, fueling additional TV coverage of the incident and even fundraised off the violation. And so, of course, she's making a lot out of this, a lot of appearances, and on it goes. And speaking of racializing this, Senator Tim Scott was on the floor during the debate about Jeff Sessions. And this is interesting. You have to hear this. The black senator from South Carolina, this is what he said.
My friends and my staff, they're not used to the level of animus that comes in from the liberal left, who suggests that I somehow am not helpful to the cause of liberal America, and therefore I am not helpful to black America, because they see those as one and the same. I brought some of the pages of chats that I have from folks on, actually I don't have chat, the comments that I get from Twitter about my support of Jeff Sessions. Tracy V. Johnson, Mr. Tracy J. sends in Senator Uncle Tim Scott. Everyone in South Carolina who happens to be a left-winger knows that Tim Scott is an Uncle Tom. S is not for Scott. It is for fertilizer. S. Scott says, a white man in a black body, Tim Scott backs Jeff Sessions for attorney general. Of my chief of staff, until 3 weeks ago, the only African-American chief of staff in the United States Senate out of 100 is the chief of staff for a Republican. The second African-American chief of staff in the United States Senate, is the chief of staff of a Republican. And yet, they say of my chief of staff, she's high yellow, an implication that she's just not black enough.
All right, that's Senator Tim Scott. He said a lot more than that, but you get the point. This is all about accusing people of racism, accusing blacks of being traitors. It's at nasty, ugly business, which the left, personified in the Democrats, has perfected, and it has got to stop. And we've got to be smarter, and people have to stop falling for this. And so the good news this morning is that Senator Jeff Sessions, a fine man in every way, will be the Attorney General of the United States, and we can lift our heads high for a change, knowing we have an honest Attorney General who can prosecute the law fairly. So that's good news. Sandy Rios in the morning.
It is interesting that in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., the first and last rays of sunlight fall every day upon its tallest building, the 555-foot Washington Monument. And there on its top, inscribed on the four-sided aluminum capstone, are the Latin words Laus Deo, which means praise be to God. This simple expression of praise reflects America's abiding belief that God has blessed our country with liberty and divine favor. Hello, everyone. Tim Wildman again. We're going to Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, for our spiritual heritage tours in June and September, and we'll see this Washington Monument. That's only one of the many monuments and places we'll see. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will lead the way as we talk about the places, the time, the events, and the people of our early American Christian heritage. For more information, visit the website spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
We desperately need the light of the gospel to shatter the darkness that is sweeping through our land.
Evangelist Sammy Tippett for Fusion, the Heart Cry for Revival Conference.
We're asking Christian leaders to join us in seeking God for a mighty work of His Spirit in this critical hour. I've seen God transform entire nations, places like Romania, where God dispelled the darkness of atheism through the prayers of His people. I want to share with you how God did that and what He can do in our nation. So join me at the Heart Cry for Revival Fusion Conference.
Sponsored in part by American Family Association, the Fusion Conference will be April 23rd through the 27th in the Billy Graham Training Center at The Cove in Asheville, North Carolina. Register at heartcryforrevival.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and Commentary next. Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the Church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu. A homeschool controversy in Buffalo, New York. Last year, Kiara Harris decided to pull her two grade school-age children from a failing public school. So Ms. Harris went about filing all the proper documents with City Hall and the school district. She made an appointment to see the homeschool coordinator and received notification her children were officially unenrolled from public school. A week later, Ms. Harris received a telephone call from Child Protective Services. They wanted to know why her kids were not in public school. And a few weeks later, they showed up at her home with the police. She was arrested and the children placed in foster care. Television station WKBW reports they've seen all the documents, and it appears Ms. Harris followed the letter of the law. This is a very disturbing situation and one that every homeschool family in the nation should heed. I'm Todd Stearns.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Listen, that Coretta Scott King clip that we played a few minutes ago where she acknowledges Jeff Sessions. We're going to put that on our Facebook page and let you and have you share it. There's also a picture of the NAACP award that Jeff Sessions received, and we'll put that on our Facebook page too, just so you can share it and just set the record straight. Elizabeth Warren is a liar, and she knew she was lying when she read that, and now she's playing the victim, and now she's got a new book, or she's writing one. So this is, you know, great promotion for her. This is really insidious, and this is the way it works. Destroy all these people and then make something for yourself. I've got, oh my goodness, I have a story. I got lots of stories this morning, and I hope to get to them. But an important thing that I want to share with you this morning is that we are continuing to partner with India Partners. And the idea, of course, is to get little girls, especially little girls off the streets, out of the brothels where they are, their whole lives are being ruined. No question about that. In fact, hang on just a second. You know what? I'm going to have to come back to that because for some reason the notes that I had with a phone number, unless the guys can give it to me, are missing. But India Partners, of course, began in 1984 as a child sponsorship program, but it's moved really to the area of getting little girls out of sex trafficking. And as I recall, I think $7 a day $7 will get a child out of this situation for a day. So anything that you can give will be helpful. Seven times whatever will help one little child. As young as 8 years old, they're taking them into these brothels. And sometimes, you know, they're born there and they never know anything else. And so this is why every year we pitch our hand in to help India Partners. And every year, of course, you are generous as you always are to help. If you'd like to help, go to AFR.net. That's AFR.net. And the phone number, do you guys have it there to help me? Okay, they're working on it. I'll give it to you shortly. I don't know. This is what happens when you juggle lots of paper, which is what I do. Sometimes I have to take a picture of all the papers that surround me in the morning. It's funny because I print out so much. It's unbelievable. And then I have to throw it in piles, and it's just all over the office. So I have to, every day, you know, stay on top of that, or I would be, you couldn't even open the door to the office. So anyway, but I appreciate your generosity for India Partners, and we'll get that phone number. But if you'd like to go online, you can do it that way, AFR.net, AFR.net. Well, the immigration ban has been stayed by that judge out in Washington State. The Ninth Circuit Court, yes, I meant to say circus. Some of you, I guess I didn't deliver that very well, but, you know, it is, that's, I told you, that's the nickname for the court, the Ninth Circus. And for good reason, we'll talk about that in a second, but they are deliberating, you see. After they did that never before public hearing so that we could all hear the transaction, and we saw that the justice attorney was weak, and we also saw that the judges were at least two of them were quite biased. They tipped their hand. They have a political view on this, and so they're not willing to adjudicate. We know that President Trump's immigration order is lawful. We know it is lawful. The president read the statute in a press briefing yesterday in detail. It's just, there's just no mistake, and the president did say even a bad high school student could understand that. He's right about that. So, now, I think that the Ninth Circuit, personally, I think they're slow walking it, because the longer they take to make this decision, the longer it's going to take. The ban is just not going to be turned around. And, of course, they're making hay in the news cycle because it creates some bit of embarrassment, especially to uninformed people. So let's see. John Roberts reported a little bit about this last night. Let's listen. Cut to.
Good evening to you. And a split tonight between the president and his Supreme Court nominee over the sharp language that the president has used in attacking the ruling against his immigration ban. Judge Neil Gorsuch telling Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal tonight that he found the verbal attacks that the president has been leveling at members of the judiciary disheartening and demoralizing. A White House official tonight said that Judge Gorsuch was merely stating his views. And there is no sign at this point that the president is about to back off.
It's INA 212F, 8 USC 1182F, suspension of entry or imposition of restrictions by the president.
While the Ninth Circuit ponders the fate of his immigration ban, President Trump gave a public lesson in the law today, reading the statute he says gives him the authority to do it.
A bad high school student would understand this. Anybody would understand this.
The president is on the warpath against the courts, tweeting that federal district judge James Robart's order to suspend the immigration ban was horrible, dangerous, and wrong, warning, if the U.S. does not win this case, as it so obviously should, we can never have the security and safety to which we are entitled. Politics. And he was not impressed with what he heard from the Ninth Circuit last night.
I listened to a bunch of stuff last night on television. That was disgraceful. It was disgraceful. Because what I just read to you is what we have. And it just can't be written any plainer or better.
You know, it's interesting, John Roberts, Sandy Rios back with you. There's John Roberts on Fox. You notice how John worded that. Trump read the statute, he says, gives him the authority. Because John's not he's not a fan of Donald Trump's. I don't know this personally. I just know by the way he reports it. The statute says it in plain language. Trump is right about this. And could I just point out that the executive branch and the judicial branch are separate branches of government? The president has every right to lash out. And the judiciary has been handled with kid gloves for decades now for no good reason. They have been behaving badly. They have made horrible decisions. They have put our nation at risk. They have been a protected class of elites. And they, many of them, even the good guys, believe in, I think maybe Gorsuch might be one of them, the judicial supremacism. Like they are somehow, they are the untouchables. They are not the untouchables. And it's time they get called out, and I find it refreshing. And I'll give you an idea why the Ninth Circuit should be called out. Dan Springer did a report on this on Fox last night. Let's listen.
The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, based in San Francisco, has been a target of Republicans for decades. It routinely is the most overturned court in the U.S. In 2012, the Supreme Court reversed 86% of the rulings it reviewed from the Ninth. Perhaps the most controversial decision? Striking down the Pledge of Allegiance due to the phrase, under God. It also ruled citizens have no constitutional right to own guns and is often overruled when showing its disdain for capital punishment. Critics deride the court, calling it the Ninth Circus and the Nutty Ninth. Arizona Senator Jeff Flake is the latest Republican to introduce legislation to break up the Ninth, which covers 9 western states with 20% of the country's population.
We have a bedrock principle of swift access to justice, and if you live in Arizona or anywhere in the Ninth Circuit, you just don't have it. 15 months it takes for the average decision to be handed down, and that's far too long.
Flake's bill would create a new 12th Circuit Court, taking 6 states from the 9th. Some think the court's liberal label is overblown.
The thing about the law is there's ambiguity. There are fair and reasonable and smart minds can differ on important legal questions.
Now, the Ninth Circuit is about to make a key decision on President Trump's travel ban from 7 countries with majority Muslim populations. Only one of the judges randomly assigned to the case, Richard Clifton, was appointed by a Republican. William Canby was appointed by Jimmy Carter and Michelle Friedland by Barack Obama. During yesterday's oral argument, Judge Friedland was especially hard on the Justice Department's lawyer.
Has the government pointed to any evidence connecting these countries with terrorism?
Making a prediction from oral arguments is tough, but a former U.S. attorney under President Bush thinks Trump will likely suffer another setback.
Listening to them, I think there may be an inclination to leave Judge Robart's order intact and let Judge Robart's process continue.
Leaving Judge Robart's decision in force would also, of course, leave the restraining order in place. Still, there are others who think, despite this being the Ninth Circuit, the panel could come up with a narrow ruling that would reinstate the travel ban for those who are not green card holders and have never set foot in the U.S.
Oh, no. That's not going to happen. I'm just telling you. There's no way they're going to decide in President Trump's favor. And the judge, Judge Friedland, that you heard, the female judge, who an Obama appointee, she's saying, is there any connection between these countries and terrorism? You know, that's not the issue they're supposed to be deciding. They are not supposed to be deciding whether or not this was a justifiable order. Their narrow job was to decide whether the president of the United States stepped out of the bounds to do this order. And he didn't. It's perfectly legal. He has, by statute, in very plain language, the right to do what he did. But yet they're going into the politics of it because they're political. Now, again, they're the ones that wanted to remove under God out of the pledge. So you see the pattern here. 86% of the time in 2008, they were overturned because of their radical decisions. There's no way Donald Trump will win in the Ninth Circus. And so it's going to come back to the Supreme Court, and that's the wild card to me. So anyway, here's some other interesting things, though. The Morning Consult, which is part of Politico, and they're not a conservative. Politico has some good information, but you have to always know they lean left. But they did a survey, and this is what they found, even Politico. The immigration ban is one of Trump's most popular orders. 55% of Americans polled approve, 38% disapprove, and 8% don't know. I'm going to break this down a little bit more. Here's some of the other questions they ask. These are the executive orders. The one on sanctuary cities, 55% approve, 33% disapprove. Muslim countries from entering the U.S., 55% approve, 38% disapprove. Freezes on federal government regulations, 54% approve, 33% disapprove. I could go on the XL pipeline and all that, but let's keep the discussion to the immigration issue since that's what we're talking about. Now, here's another interesting story. You know, when I talk about immigration, illegal immigration, and not controlling the borders, I have for years tried to make the case. I think this is the best way to make it, is to make it real personal. Like, you know, you've heard me say this before, so bear with me. But if you consider that you live in a neighborhood and some disaster happens and your house is okay and your family's okay and your next door neighbors knock at the door with their kids, they're desperate, their house is destroyed, you'd probably take them in. You'd feed them and you'd probably give them clothes and you'd take care of them. But then the neighbors on the other side come to your door and they knock and they have all their kids and you might take them in too. And then the neighbors across the street and then the neighbors down the street. And pretty soon you have a never-ending line of people at your door knocking. I guess it's the wrong comparison because at least there's a door and they are knocking. You know, can you then justify feeding all of your neighbors and your kids start to go hungry? Can you justify then clothing all of them and your kids begin not to have clothes? Can you afford, are you going to give up, you know, providing, you know, schooling for your kids, whatever you provide, medical, and because you have to take care of everyone? Really, see, even scripturally, we are to take care of our own families first. If a man does not take care of his family, he's worse than an infidel. Now, we used to not know quite what that meant, but we know now because thanks to the Islamists what an infidel is. And it's not a compliment. And so you are to take care of your family. That's moral. That's good. America is our family. It's our family here. This is our extended family. And we are to take care of our American family first. And then with what we have left, which is what we've been doing for generations, we help others in need. All right, so there's I've never heard of him before. He calls himself Joey Salads. He's a video guy. He went out to L.A. airport and asked the protesters. You remember they were out, you know, outraged at the executive orders, you know, temporarily banning the influx of Muslims from anyone from these countries. And so this is what, when he asked them, you know, if they would, okay, so listen, I need some help here. We want to actually help these refugees. Will you take one or two in and will you take care of them? And they need some food and water and blah, 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 blah. It's really interesting the response he got. This is Joy Salad. Let's listen.
We're hoping to find people that will let them shelter at their place of residency.
It'd be interesting supporting.
Yeah, would you let any stay at your place of residence?
We're not able to do that.
No? Are you willing to provide any services to help refugees?
I am, but I live with a man who is a Trump supporter.
Oh, no.
I don't think he goes.
Oh, no. What about you?
I live in an apartment.
All right, so you can't.
I might be able to help in other ways, though.
You're willing to help in other ways?
Yeah.
Sure. We just want to make sure we have a place for these refugees to go.
I'm very interested in helping. I'm a little apprehensive, and I also have a female roommate who's like a very nervous girl.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but I'm definitely interested.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's sort of like, we'll figure it out.
How many refugees will you be willing to hold?
I mean, I only have a couch.
I mean, that will work. It's a situation, because it's like they can't go anywhere. But the only problem is you would have to just provide a bed for them, which a couch would be suitable, and then just make sure food. Like, you just gotta make sure you support them enough with just food and water until legislation passes to allow them.
I don't know that I can commit to that. That's
yeah.
A hard thing.
Free treatment.
I'm a female. I'm like a single female living by myself, so I again also apprehensive, but I would like to be on the email.
So you're not willing to shelter any? That's like our toughest thing. So I'm trying to push that.
Yeah, I might be able to find somebody. Living by myself, I feel not great.
All right. Well, it goes on and on and on. He doesn't find anybody who wants to help them. He goes to a guy who's an older leftist. I could recognize the type, the long hair, the suit, very smug, standing up on a curb. And he asks him, and he says, "I do other things." Well, won't you take them in your house? Oh no, I do other things. I have other ways of helping. And he keeps pressing him, and finally the guy snaps at him. I already answered you, okay? So the old hippie, not willing to take any either. And so, but there they are protesting why Americans won't let anybody in, throw down the barriers, don't have any kind of checks and balances, because it's just. But they're not willing personally to take them in. They have so much compassion, and this is the nature of what we see happening. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. and he goes to the doctor. True story. He goes to the doctor and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Life, love, and family. Featuring the American Association of Christian Counselors President, Dr. Tim Clinton. Each weekday evening, you'll hear Dr. Clinton and his expert guests address important and sometimes difficult issues of our day that impact your life, your love, and your family, using the scriptures as their text. Access to archive programs is available at lifeloveandfamily.net. Life, Love, and Family, 11 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Oops, there's a piece I missed a little bit.
Grandpa, why do we always pick up litter when we go hiking?
Well, we're just making it nicer for people who come after us a little bit. It's called stewardship.
My grandfather taught me that you should always leave a place better than you found it. That it's important to invest in the lives of your children and grandchildren, leaving them with a godly legacy they can build on. That's why I decided to set up a charitable gift annuity with the AFA Foundation.
It's called stewardship.
I know that my gift will support a ministry that honors the biblical principles I hold dear, and it's a way to invest in the future of our country. The AFA Foundation also arranged for me to have a steady fixed income, so I don't have to worry in the midst of changing times.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The next necessary step in the national security course correction President Donald Trump has promised requires the designation of the Muslim Brotherhood as what it is, a terrorist organization. For years, presidents of both parties have labored under the illusion that the brothers were actually useful and reliable partners in countering what was euphemistically known as violent extremism. Among other things, that epic strategic mistake prompted President Obama to work with the Muslim Brotherhood to supplant friendly governments across the Middle East. President Trump's predecessors also legitimated and enabled the Brotherhood's operatives here. Yet, they are Sharia supremacists who share completely the ideology and agenda of terrorist organizations like Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State, and Boko Haram. Mr. Trump's oath of office requires him to defend our Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. To do so, he must designate the terrorist Muslim Brotherhood. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The Muslim Brotherhood is banned in 5 Muslim countries, classified as a terrorist group. Founded in Egypt in 1928, its goal is for society to be ruled by Islamic law. Fox News has learned the Trump administration is considering banning it here, too, and designating it as a foreign terrorist organization known as an FTO.
White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer was asked if President Trump will make the designation.
I'm not going to get ahead of any announcements that we may or may not have coming in the near future, but make no mistake, the president understands the threat that our nation faces, and he's going to do everything he can to attack it, root it out, and destroy it.
I firmly believe that it does threaten national security interests.
Florida Republican Congressman Mario Diaz-Balart and Texas Senator Ted Cruz have parallel bills calling on Secretary of State Rex Tillerson to consider if the Muslim Brotherhood should be added to the terrorist list. At his confirmation hearing, Tillerson called the Muslim Brotherhood, quote, agents of radical Islam. Experts say it has U.S. followers, and its ideology has spawned terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda and Hamas. But the group claims it renounced violence decades ago.
You have leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood who are designated terrorists. You have organizations under the Muslim Brotherhood like Hamas who are designated as terrorist organizations. So I think it's pretty much a no-brainer that this is a terrorist organization.
But some are wary of labeling the group as terrorists. Robert Polito specializes in constitutional law at Seton Hall University and says the group does not qualify as a terrorist organization under U.S. law.
I think designating the Muslim Brotherhood as an FTO is bad in legal terms. I think it's bad in terms of diplomacy. I think it's bad in terms of civil liberties, and it's bad in terms of our constitutional tradition. And it could have a devastating effect on Muslim American communities in the United States.
Designating the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist group has been tried before. Last year, Congress considered a similar bill that was co-sponsored by now CIA Director Mike Pompeo, but it was not voted on by the House.
Ooh, all right. You know, Sandy Rios back with you. That was Eric Schon. You know how I feel about this. I don't have to go off on a diatribe about the Muslim Brotherhood. You know that I'm in totally 190% in favor of designating them as a terrorist organization. Let me just tell you a couple of things. This is probably the issue of divide and the Trump team as much as anything, and I've tried to explain to you. There's talk now of Elliot Abrams being nominated. He's someone out of the past who's had a lot of experience, but Elliot Abrams is bad on this. He's all in favor of the Muslim Brotherhood because he perceives that they are, you know, they're not radical. They're not violent, I guess is the word. So this is what a lot of people think, but the Muslim Brotherhood is of the very same mindset as Hamas, Al-Qaeda. They are born from the same cloth. It's just that they do what they call civilization jihad. They do it stealthily. They want to destroy us from within. I want to send Elliot Abrams and others, including the person interviewed in that clip, this explanatory memorandum. Read that. Put that in your pipe and smoke it and tell me that the Muslim Brotherhood is not a danger to us. But I want to give you a couple of stories. This one especially. If I don't read another thing this morning, I want to read this to you. This is a follow-up on those IT staffers I told you about in the House. They are brothers, Abid, Imram, and Jamal. Three brothers abruptly relieved of their duties on suspicion that they accessed congressional computers without permission. However, some are still working because, according to a report in Politico on Monday, the brothers are shared employees, employees hired by multiple offices which use them as needed for IT services. Each office would need to fire them, and multiple Democratic lawmakers have not yet determined the employment of each staffer. Imram's wife, Hina Alvi, and another House staffer with connections to Imram and Juan are also being investigated in connection with the alleged theft, according to a senior House official close to the investigation. Now, I'm just beginning on this, so hang on and don't stop listening, please. We're going to put this on our Facebook page because this is one that needs to be shared. Here's the thing. Three members of the intelligence panel and five members of the House Committee on Foreign Affairs were among the dozens of members who employed the suspects on a shared basis. The two committees deal with many of the nation's most sensitive issues and documents, including those related to the war on terrorism. According to Politico, Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Representative Gregory Meeks are two Democratic lawmakers who have not yet cut ties. Remember that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, her email was hacked and made public. That's one of the reasons she had to resign. And yet she has these guys working for her and has yet to let them go. Now here's more. Questions are mounting as to how they were all able to pass background checks considering their histories of financial troubles. As noted by the Daily Caller, Abid, Imram, and Jamal all shared a house in Lorton, Virginia, owned by Hina Alvi and received unusually high salaries, yet the family always seemed to struggle. Alvi, who did not respond to the request for comment, has taken multiple second mortgages. Jamal, who public records suggest is only 22 years old and first began working in the house when he was 20, was paid nearly $160,000 a year, three times the average house IT staff salary. Abid was paid $161,000 and Imran $165,000. The Daily Caller further reported on the family's financial woes Tuesday, saying that the three brothers and wife have a history of massive debts, bankruptcy, fondness for fast cars and real estate, an unusually complicated web of intertwined finances. And despite their generous salaries, they were involved in multiple suspicious mortgage transfers, debt evading bankruptcy. Abid had more than $1 million in debt. Abid had stolen money and vehicles from them, and on it goes. And now they're wondering if they ever were vetted, how they were vetted, who signed off on this. So my point is this. We are being infiltrated. And these, I can't find an adjective that I can actually speak to you. These people in Washington who refuse to do anything, who are so offended. This would be against our civil liberties. This would be, need to stop, smell the coffee and wake up. Because the Muslim Brotherhood in particular has so deeply embedded itself in our government that we are in serious trouble. And speaking of them, Keith Ellison, the first Muslim member of Congress now, he's on the Intelligence Committee. And by the way, he also used these three brothers. They were his IT people. So Keith Ellison is up for, the head of the DNC. But now here's a report coming from the Washington Free Beacon. Representative Keith Ellison said that Jews wanted to, quote, oppress minorities all over the world and refer to them as slave traders, according to a former classmate interviewed by Mother Jones. Ellison, one of the front runners to be the elected chairman of the DNC in an election later this month, is one of the most liberal members of Congress, a vocal critic of the Jewish state of Israel. Michael Olenek was the opinions editor at the Minnesota Daily at the time that Ellison, who then went by Keith Hakim as a student at the University of Minnesota Law School, was submitting numerous op-eds defending the Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan. Olenek, who was Jewish, told Mother Jones that Ellison's argument at the time was that, quote, an oppressed group could not be racist toward Jews because Jews were themselves oppressors. And so on and on we go. This is a problem, ladies and gentlemen. This is a serious problem. I want to, two things, a practical thing, excuse me for, this is important. When I mentioned India Partners that we are joining with to help these little girls, I didn't have the phone number, so here it is. It's 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396, or you can go to afa.net. And make your most generous pledge. And by the way, it is $7.08 that provides one day of safety and rescue for these little girls. And so I hope that you will be generous, and I know that you will. Again, the number is 877-616-2396. Now, I've gotten a lot of interesting comments from you, email and on Facebook. You know, our Facebook page is pretty active, Sandy Rios in the Morning, in case you don't know, haven't been on it. And by the way, if you do Twitter, I'm at Sandy Rios. That's my Twitter handle. And so we've got a lot of interesting things going on there too. And the thing about the Twitter, if you follow me on Twitter, is that I do tweet out some of these really important stories that you might not otherwise hear. So I try to do that as often as I can. So that's the advantage of following me on Twitter. So it's at Sandy Rios. All right, this is from I think this is from Margaret. She's been listening and for a long time. She always sends good stuff. She says, "Dear Sandy, when people refuse to believe that these refugees pose no threat to U.S. citizens, they may be surprised to find out that often crimes go unreported in their communities. Out here in the quiet Midwest of South Dakota, people are unaware that Somalian refugees have been taken into our state through Lutheran social services and Catholic charities. In Aberdeen, South Dakota, a 39-year-old Somalian, Libyan Mohammed, here for 1 week, attacked and sexually assaulted a 31-year-old handicapped woman with severe disabilities while she sat outside her residence, which was a home for the disabled. Not one piece of news in our local media, no TV, no newspaper, no radio. It's not the first time a crime by a refugee or an illegal immigrant has gone underreported. We've had an increase in crime, drunk illegal aliens plowing cars into other drivers who died as a result. I'm not sure who controls the release of information, but I am quite sure that we in South Dakota are not the only people whose state withholds information from the public. And surely you're not, Margaret. This is happening all over. It's happening in Europe. In fact, there's a poll that I didn't have a chance to read to you that kind of comports with our poll. Most Europeans want immigration ban from Muslim-majority countries. A poll of Europeans, because they're being assaulted. The people know. The Germans, I think, the German government is the worst abuser of the people. They've actually punished people for speaking out against this, for saying, hey, we can't have this. Our people are at risk. There's more crime. And then they are the ones that get in trouble with the law. It's shocking what they are doing, what Angela Merkel is doing in Germany. But this is in South Dakota. And then Margaret goes on to say, a dear friend of mine called Lutheran Social Services to solicit aid for two young friends who had just lost both parents in an awful car accident. He was told that there were no funds available to assist due to all local funds being directed to refugee assistance. He was outraged that most of their funding comes through donations from the public. In short, money for refugees, housing, food, and medical, but nothing for our own citizens. Such insanity. And I would say it's just immoral. It's just wrong. Goes back to what I was talking about. How we take care of our own family first. We must take care of our own. And by the way, I want to remind you that the Center for Immigration Studies did a study and found that we could take care of refugees overseas for a fraction of the cost of what it costs to bring them here and try to resettle them, teach them English, change their whole lives, pay for everything, give them welfare, give them, you know, whatever it is that we give them, cell phones, I'm not sure. But there are numbers on this to prove that this is really a foolish move. Puts our nation at risk because the cultures are so different, because they don't choose to assimilate, and it also drains the national treasury. But I guess it's a win-win then for the left, isn't it? This is from Stan. He says, thank you so much for highlighting what I believe should be the top of the issues confronting America. God himself said my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And it's even worse that our kids are being fed outright lies at school. I started with my 21-year-old son who opted not to go to college but to start his own business. I push for kids to enter trade schools. I own a company servicing the manufacturing industry, and I can tell you firsthand that even if Trump is able to boost our manufacturing industry, there's simply not enough skilled trades employees to support the growth. This is an enormous issue in the coming few years. We are graduating 20 lawyers to one engineer, and the liberal rot that is taught in four-year colleges is mind-numbing. We've got some serious problems because, as a nation, we've told God we don't need him and don't want him, and in our lives, revival is needed so badly. You're right about that, Stan. I'm optimistic, though. I feel like God has intervened, and we have a window of time here. And this is maybe a good moment for those of you who have kids to encourage them to start learning trades, to think ahead, because maybe, you know, God willing, that is our future. Don't encourage them to go to colleges and universities. Okay, that's going to be controversial. I don't care. Encourage them to go to learn whatever their gifts are. Follow the abilities that they have. Some people are really good, you know, at building and being mechanical. So encourage that. That's a marvelous gift that God gives. It's not less important than being an attorney. For heaven's sake, we all know that being attorney is sometimes a very worthless pursuit. There are so many wonderful statements that you've made. I heard from a Purdue University professor who listens, a retired professor, Don, who says he was in education for 40 years, but he's glad he's out. And so thank you for listening. Just so many different people listening, and I always appreciate your comments, and I do try to read just about as many of them as I possibly can, probably nearly all of them, and I can't respond to them, but I really, really appreciate. They do encourage me, and they enrich the show. So thank you. Our phone number, by the way, for India Partners is 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396. And by the way, it's at Sandy Rios tweet. That's my Twitter handle, at Sandy Rios tweet. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.